two kaiju. Both alike in genre, in fair Hollow Earth, where we lay our scene. From ancient franchise break to new shared universe, where primate blood makes reptile hands unclean. From forth the unused loins of these two foes, a pair of star-crossed titans take their life, whose misadventured Skull Island shenanigans overthrows, doth with their score draw bury their ancient strife, which but Mechagodzilla intervenes, naught could remove, is now the 1 hour 53 minutes traffic of our stage.
It's not just a matter of the same country, sir. We're not even in the same universe.
Hello and welcome to Wibbly Wobbly Dicey Wicey, and today we have another universe segment covering, because we have our finger on the pulse of the pop culture zeitgeist, we're covering Godzilla versus King Kong, and probably this will come out about 4 months after the film has died down and no one cares about it anymore, but for the sake of argument, let's assume we've got it right for once. With me today is the stalwart and ever true Elf Gamer of Rassilon fame, Michael Nixon. Hello, Michael.
Rawr. That's Godzilla 4. Hello.
My King Kong linguistic skills, well,
they don't really translate to podcasts, unfortunately.
I don't want us to get barred from Podcastville, because it's entirely possible. I can only swear in King Kong. and, you know, I don't want us to lose the Primate market. But as I said, we're covering Godzilla versus King Kong. So to start with, there will almost certainly be spoilers. We're not going to cover the plot exactly, but we'll have to cover enough of the elements of the film. So if you haven't seen it, we're going to be spoiling something probably by accident. Like, for example, the fact that, you know, Godzilla is not as good as King Kong. Spoiler alert.
Well, that's just false. Have you seen the film? Part of the fun of this coming out a little purposely after the movie is that we can spoil, and particularly the versions of Godzilla and King Kong that we built within the Doctor Who RPG rules, I think we discussed, were specifically, you know, legendary monster verse, whatever you're calling it, versions of those monsters, because both have had so many different versions over the decades, of course.
And we are so, you know, zeitgeisty in this podcast, you know, giving a 4 month gap for this episode to be relevant. We wanted to make sure you knew we're covering the current version of Godzilla versus King Kong. Michael, you're the Godzilla expert and I'm a big King Kong fan. We're going to tackle it one at a time, and we're going to go into the sort of concept of the Hollow Earth, which is integral to this film. So
surprisingly, yeah.
Yeah, wow. Very surprisingly. This is the QAnon version of Godzilla and King Kong, obviously.
They went way in. Yeah, they even have a podcast guy. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's true.
I mean, really, Godzilla versus King Kong on a analogy level, on a sort of metaphorical, poetic level, I think it's clear that Godzilla is... Oh my God, I've just realized. Yeah, Godzilla would be the Democrat, wouldn't he? And King Kong would be the Republican.
Maybe. I wish they were back to like being a metaphor for nuclear destruction and a metaphor for militarized colonialization. But yeah, sure. The political parties slapping. That's good too.
Well, I was just thinking of the two parties, who is going to be the one giving out a warning about the dangers of nuclear weapons? It's not going to be the...
Fair.
It's not going to be
That's
the Republicans, is it? So...
And also, you know, there's something about Kong finding an axe and going, this is mine. This is my axe.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're onto something.
Exactly.
There.
And of course, King Kong coming from an ancient, dilapidated, worn out antique civilization with old ideas that are no longer valid.
Oh, enough about the UK. Let's get into the movie.
I would defend my country, but I can't. It's really that simple.
Yes. All right. So if you've come here for UK versus US, that was your... You stayed your hour. All right. Let's get into some big monsters.
Yeah, well, again, now we're talking about America. A big monster. So
it is very large.
We're going to give you a brief history of both of the creatures on the off chance that you have been living in the Hollow Earth and haven't kept up to date with these people.
Yes, I'm hardly an expert, but I am quite a big fan of Godzilla and the various, kaiju films of Japan. A lot of the, you know, Ultraman stuff and all that as well. But Godzilla, I am a big fan of, particularly, you know, I did really enjoy some of the legendary films as well. Anywho, Godzilla or Gojira is one of the king of the monsters. He's one of the biggest kaiju. He's probably sort of the signature giant monster of Japan, to the point where a few years ago they made Godzilla an ambassador to the country, which involved a ceremony where he became a citizen, which is just pretty awesome. I love it very much. So yeah, he's kind of a national treasure, and an international one as well. The character first appeared in the 1954 film Godzilla, which was adapted over here in the States with the inclusion of just like a randomly extra shot white guy running around being like, "My God, it's a Godzilla." It's a lot. But it started sort of a run of those movies being adapted over here in various questionable subtitles, dubs, adaptations, all that sort of thing, all the way down to Rankin Bass. It's sort of the cartoon versions of Godzilla are what end up connecting Kong to Godzilla, and it's how you get like the first Toho King Kong movies. It's all very weird. All the licensing stuff is very interesting. Anyway, the original Godzilla was a big metaphor for the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and the wave of nuclear destruction that was sort of this unprecedented man-made disaster. Godzilla initially being a force that responded in reaction to that. However, the legendary version of Godzilla is quite a bit different. It's an ancient, ageless monster. You know, it's sort of the Titans are more mythical, a bit more Lovecraftian, a bit less practical. For example, the legendary version of Godzilla is not like a dinosaur on an island that was empowered by nuclear blasts. It's a creature that slumbered below the surface of the earth that was awakened by those nuclear blasts and like surfaced to munch on some radiation. The legendary version is quite a bit different. So as such, the stats, you know, reflecting that version of Godzilla mean, you know, if you're looking for something a little bit more classic, you may want to tweak the stats to your various preferences. One of the biggest things is, you know, we're only really focusing on Godzilla and King Kong, but there are a litany of other Daikaiju giant monsters in the Toho catalog, the sort of amazing catalog of monsters that Godzilla has fought and fought alongside, like King Ghidorah or Mechagodzilla, who shows up in Godzilla versus Kong, or Gigan, who's very cool, has a chainsaw on his belly. It's an excellent monster. You know, additionally, monsters that have shown up in King of the Monsters, previous legendary Godzilla films, like Mothra, Rodan, etc. Godzilla's also more than once been a parent. So if you want to include sort of baby Godzillas in your version of the game, there's a lot of precedent for it with Manila or Godzilla Jr. or those weird little babies from the 98 movie or Godzuki from that, the wacky cartoon Godzilla. There's a lot of room for you to have fun with, you know, maybe your characters discover like a baby Godzilla and then, you know, big, you know, large father Godzilla shows up and is like, "Hey, you have stolen my child." I think there's a lot of fun room for that. And Godzilla is already a very prolific, that's the word I'm looking for, prolific crossover character in America, in other countries, to the point where, you know, Godzilla has battled in the Marvel Comics against the Fantastic Four and leading to one of my favorite random Marvel Comics characters, Red Ronin, a giant robot specifically designed to fight Godzilla, although they can't say that anymore. So now Marvel Comics just has sort of like a giant robot laying around for fun.
The beauty of that is that this links directly. Here's your 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Because he's fought S.H.I.E.L.D. in the Fantastic Four and the Avengers, the Seventh Doctor has met the Fantastic Four, which means he's in the same universe as Godzilla. And it also therefore means, beautifully, because who doesn't want to see this, it means Godzilla can legitimately fight the Transformers.
Yes. Oh, that's very true. You could also throw the Space Knights in there. There's all kinds of cool Marvel stuff you could chuck against Godzilla. Yeah, that's wild.
So if Marvel, if you want to chuck a few shekels our way for giving you that plug.
Oh yeah, I don't think they have Godzilla, but they do have Alien versus Predator now. And I will say, Alien versus Predator versus Godzilla, give me a call.
Again, already we're in deep crossover territory. So as always, all these stats will be on the blog in the form of a trading card.
Oh yes, we should do some numbers, of course.
So we're going to run through the stats fairly quickly today for two reasons. One, we've got two characters to cover. They're quite simple characters. At the end of the day, it's a big reptile and a big monkey. So the stats are there for flavor as much as anything else. And how hard is it to hurt this thing, really? And we're going to give you like a baseline, as always, of how does this compare to existing extant Doctor Who creatures. And then we're going to talk about the Hollow Earth and the most important part, which is how to seamlessly fit Godzilla and King Kong on the Hollow Earth into your Doctor Who campaign. Because Doctor Who actually has a far richer history when it comes to kaiju and, well, hidden lands as well, than you may realize. Michael, do you want to kick us off with Gojira?
Yes, the stats for Godzilla. We start with an awareness of 5, which is comparative to the Atraxi or the werewolf. A coordination of 3, which is Krillitane level, wily, you know, clever, but not, you know, crazy intelligent. An ingenuity of 3 as well, which is, again, Krillitane or Sycorax level. I think we can agree Godzilla does rock. Up with a presence of 5, this is sort of a higher level presence that gives Godzilla sort of the scary, impressive presence of the beast from, that's the beast from the beast below. No, what am I thinking? No, the Satan Pit. It's the Satan Pit guy, right?
The Satan Pit, yes, the Impossible Planet, yeah.
I can't believe I got those titles mixed up. Oh, I'm going to Doctor Who jail. we also did a resolve of 5, which is, again, like, that's 10th Doctor level, that's the Rachnos level, that's, you know, Godzilla doesn't do big speeches, but when he yells, you do listen. And then sort of where the real kaiju levels come in are the strength, and that is a strength of 19, which takes you to something like the Cyber King or the Scarison, which is that big crazy Zygon spaceship that's alive. Two creatures that would be very cool to pit against Godzilla, just, you know, wink, 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 wink. And then obviously Godzilla's not really like a cell phone guy, so we just gave him a tech level of 4. It's industrial, it's contextual. He knows if he smashes thing, it will explode. He can work out problems.
Yeah, and he doesn't,
you know.
He never seems to be like, oh, what's this strange thing in front of me? He's aware of his... He knows what part of Japan he's smashing and things like that, you know? So
yeah, even going back to like King of the Monsters, he seems to get what Sarazawa is doing when he sets up the bomb. So it's like, oh, okay, this guy kind of gets what's going on. Interesting.
I just want to go back to the point where you said, when he speaks, you listen. That you're the master of understatement, Michael. That was quite fabulous. How underplayed that was.
It's comparing. You know, gotta compare the characters. When the 10th Doctor is like, "Hello," you're like, "All right." When Godzilla's like, "Rawr," you're like, "Oh, geez."
Yeah. No, lovely. I doff my cap to you, sir, on that. Right. So skills. Again, these creatures, as far as I'm aware, correct me if I'm wrong, but they didn't go into sort of formal education, so their skills are limited. I'll just run through the skills quickly. He's got a fighting of 5, fairly self-explanatory. He's a very good fighter. He pulls off one or two moves in Godzilla vs. King Kong. Correct me, Michael, but I don't remember ever throwing a haymaker before this film. But apparently he's added that to his repertoire.
He's not a big punch guy. I did do that very cool drop kick in Godzilla versus Megalon that people complain about. But no, he's not usually a punch guy.
But he's got, generally, he's a very good fighter. It's what he's for, really. Survival of 3, with an air of expertise in kaiju and their weaknesses. Now, this is borne out. Again, we're sort of crossing the streams a little bit here in the Monsterverse, but in the 2014 Godzilla film, he knows how to kill a Muto. I mean, there aren't many creatures where if you rip their jaw open and breathe atomic fire down their throat, it won't kill them. But it seemed like a deliberate move. He knows how to harm kaiju. And in the sequel, King of the Monsters, he knows how to attack the various other kaiju effectively.
He seems to have history with everybody, yeah.
The fact that he's the King of the Monsters proves that, really. No one likes Godzilla is the overarching moral of the Godzilla films. He's not popular amongst kaiju, you know. Marksman of 1, he doesn't often miss with the atomic breath. It's a very big weapon, We felt he deserved at least a score in it, a baseline score, because he never fires blind, does he? He's never doing like an area effect, hope and hit hope, you know. He never sort of closes his eyes, breathes atomic fire everywhere and hope he hits anything. So he must have marksman at least one.
Yeah, not the legendary MonsterVerse version. Again, if you're adapting, you know, your Godzillas to be more like Shin Godzilla, then it is like an area effect attack. If you're doing something more like a burning Godzilla from King of the Monsters and want to do like a pulse, the nuclear pulse thing, you could do something like that. But, you know, a completely other end of the scale, if you wanted to give Godzilla an area of expertise in basketball, there is that one commercial where Godzilla is very good at basketball. So there's a lot of versatility in the character.
Now, before we go into the traits, Michael and I talked about this. There is a kind of spin-off book in the Vortex system called the Primeval RPG, which is completely compatible with Doctor Who. It's the same rule set. Primeval was a short-lived, relatively short-lived, British and latterly American-Canadian science fiction show about portals that opened up in time and allowed dinosaurs and creatures from the past and future to come to the present. They're more or less kaiju, and this book is excellent if you want to create very detailed, granular kaiju threats. Now, we didn't want to have to make you buy another book, so we've taken a couple of ideas from it and simplified them for the Doctor Who system. It's up to you if you want to get that. If you want to create very detailed kaiju, that's the way to go for. Fairly sure you'll have to get it on eBay now, but still. So there are a couple of bits of Godzilla in the natural weapon department that we kind of lifted and jiggered from that. But other than that, you don't need to worry about it. But again, lovely book for dinosaurs and kaiju.
Sounds good, yeah. The traits we gave from the Doctor Who system include alien appearance. I think it's, you know, pretty clear he's a big old lizard. The armor is another trait just from the natural sort of reptilian defenses he's got. Environmental, this allows Godzilla to survive in air and water. He has amphibian qualities. The legendary version particularly has gills that are sort of really visible across all the films that weren't like a huge feature of previous versions. Another one is fast healing. This, I think, applies to most versions of Godzilla. And then we also, the interesting thing we added to fast healing here that I do want to spend a little time getting granular on is we have it as a, we also have a special trait option where, you know, per Godzilla film, there tends to be a period where Godzilla gets real beaten up, retreats, goes into a sort of like healing trance hibernation thing, and this is the opportunity to use special good. Basically, we've given you like a short rest kind of mechanic to repair Godzilla if necessary between big fights.
Godzilla has to run away a lot. A little bit of a cowardly streak. That's what Michael's trying to say in a polite way.
No, that's not... obligation. This is also particularly for the legendary MonsterVerse version, our take on obligation, which is sort of maintaining the balance of nature. That's kind of a big theme across from the 2014 Godzilla all the way forward, is that Godzilla is this sort of alpha version of the Titans, like the top tier Titan, and has to maintain the balance across all these other Titans. When all the other ones wake up, Godzilla wakes up, knocks them back down so the world can sort of go back into balance. This isn't really something from... This isn't ubiquitous across the versions of Godzilla. It's pretty particular to the MonsterVerse version of Godzilla. But it was something that seemed worth adding in. We even have it on the card. This is kind of defined by the players, the GM. I mean, if you look at the movies in the MonsterVerse, it's kind of defined per movie how strictly balance, you know, strictly nature-focused Godzilla really is. Even in King of the Monsters, sometimes it feels a little bit more like a pride thing, really. And then the last, before we get into the natural weapons, two actually, sorry, I totally skipped over fear factor. We give Godzilla a fear factor of 5. That's plus 10 to inspire fear. Obviously, Godzilla, very scary. If you're doing a sort of dominance display, a presence display, you know, Godzilla particularly, again, in the MonsterVerse movies, does the big thing where he rears up and fires into the sky to say, it's me, I'm Godzilla, I'm in charge. Hey, I'm speaking, hello. And then following off on that, another, you know, pivotal Doctor Who RPG trait, I think, is voice of authority, which particularly applies to Godzilla's great big roar. Again, Godzilla's not really talking, but when he speaks, you listen.
Your version of Godzilla is strangely English.
He's just tapping the glass. Excuse me, King of the Monsters here. Hello.
He's like one step away from saying, if you don't pay attention to me, I am going to write a fearsome letter to your city governor suggesting more than mild disapproval of the way I'm being treated.
I will breathe on you ever so hard. Oh dear.
I don't want to complain, but and if you could please stop shooting at me, please, honestly, I am trying to speak.
I will say this our spin-off, A Very English Godzilla, I'm quite intrigued. We should get in touch with Russell T Davies' people.
I feel like he'd be saying, please don't think of me as Godzilla. Just Godzilla was my father. I'm Mr. Zilla.
Okay? Just think of me as Manzilla. Yes, yes. Oh, God. I'm a personzilla, please.
I'm a people personzilla. Three natural weapons for Godzilla. His major weapon being his atomic breath, which is +4 to any strength attacks, and has a weapon effect of 4 lethal. His other natural weapon are his teeth and his tail, which is +2 to strength. Again, he uses that more frequently. The atomic breath is more of a finishing move. And he also has, now, with that natural weapon regarding tail is just a general effect. He also has tail swipe, which is a specific maneuver that we took from the Primeval system. But again, we've simplified it. It's half strength damage to targets within a few meters. That's quite a few meters, really. It's a fairly long tail. I don't know that it's ever been measured. He's probably too modest to measure it himself. Whilst Godzilla...
King, you're correct.
He's King of the Monsters, but I just realised that Godzilla takes a demotion every time he's around other monsters, because he's not the god of other monsters, he's just their king. It's very modest of him.
Tell it to Kong. Have you seen the title of the film?
Yes, well, exactly. We'll come on to their standings in nobility a bit later, I think. But yes, so the effect of the tail swipe is just that it knocks things down. Sometimes buildings, but always the opponent. So it's a weapon he uses to, I don't know, stun his opponents, set them up for another maneuver. So it's not a killing maneuver. And again, it's an important mechanic, but it's a flavor mechanic. It's not one that... He never finishes a fight with a tail swipe, let's put it that way. I think that's fair to say, isn't it?
Yeah, usually it's the breath attack that ends things.
So that's covered Godzilla. Again, all of these stats are in a trading card, and it's all fleshed out on the blog. So take a look there for, you know, the details that you can just take, print off, however you want to do it. Which now brings us on to King Kong, who I feel is probably the chimney sweep in our pageantry of Godzilla being a British gentleman. King Kong is a bit more of a chimney, you know, but the chimney sweep kind of a character.
I have described his depiction in Godzilla vs. Kong more than once as the Titan Homer Simpson. He scratches his butt, he sits on a couch, he burps, he like slurps out of a skull at one point. He's just he's a real American boy, I gotta tell you.
He really is. And let's be honest, what is Homer Simpson if not the American Bert the Chimney Sweep from Mary Poppins?
Yeah, you know, wow. There, we figured it out. We cracked it.
We
can close losses. It all down, everybody. We've solved the Bert the Chimney Sweep cinematic universe.
I feel once again, this goes all the way to the top.
Of the chimney. Yes.
Yeah. Awareness of 4, which puts him on the level of a Krillitan. Coordination of 5, which puts him on the level of a werewolf. Ingenuity of 2, which, and I don't know why this tickles me as much as it does, but that makes him as smart as Rose, which I think is lovely.
She's pretty wily.
Yes, she is. That's definitely, yeah, she's wily. Good. I mean, you're not wrong. Presence of 4, which gives him the same presence as the 10th Doctor or a Macra, which is an example of a Doctor Who kaiju in many ways, or will be. Resolve of 5, which again is Rachnos and the 10th Doctor, and puts him level with Godzilla in that sense, because for those of you who haven't followed King Kong, and I've just realised I've skipped his history, but he's a big monkey, climbed to the top of the Empire State Building, got killed. And since they rebooted him in 2017, he's literally tripled in height since that film. Just want to add that he's literally tripled in height. He was a teenager in the Skull Island film, and now he's as tall as Godzilla. So, you know, it's all very variable.
Yeah, scale is really particularly variable across the MonsterVerse movies. Not as a critique, as an observation. As an observation, they just keep getting bigger. I like Ultraman scale. I like 60 meters, but they're way past that now. They're into 200 meters.
King Kong's strength is 18, which is one less than Godzilla's, which bears out in the film. That makes him, again, he's roughly Cyber King's Garrison level. Tech-wise, now from the trailer, we talked about this before we started this out. We actually thought Kong might turn out to be a secret genius. But, Michael, you were right. He is Homer Simpson, but at the chimney sweep level of intelligence. So, his tech level is 4.
I really hoped he was going to make that axe. I'll just say it. I really hoped he was going to make the axe, but he finds the axe, which that dings your tech level, you know?
He's got one more story point than Godzilla 6. King Kong's history is he keeps getting rebooted. Godzilla's nature changes from film to film. King Kong's doesn't. He's found on Skull Island. He gets brought to civilization. He gets brought to America, climbs a building, gets shot down, gets killed, or doesn't. Although I will add at this point that King Kong and Godzilla did actually fight in 1962 when Toho produced a film. And I think it's fair to say that was a score draw, really, wasn't it? The 62 version?
Yeah, but it's very fun to watch, I have to say. And the Toho King Kong movies are quite enjoyable. I will be talking about one of them later in particular.
When King Kong is on his own in a film, and this is for context of scaling your character in a role-playing game, King Kong tends to be a lot smaller when he's on his own. But when Godzilla turns up, he tends to grow. So, you know, like I said, he used to climb the Empire State Building. Now the Empire State Building is something he pushes over on his way to climbing a big building. So you've got his stats, you've got a potted history. Do you want to take us through his skills, Michael, just quickly?
Yes, we've given Kong an athletics of 3, a craft of 3. Again, even without making, you know, the axe, he still does pull a tree trunk out of the ground and make a spear out of it and chuck it, you know. We've given him a fighting of 5, that's comparable to Godzilla. A survival of 3, that's higher a bit. He's a little bit... He needs a little bit of an edge on the survival scale, I'll say. And a marksman of 2. Because again, while he isn't necessarily, you know, craft... he still is able to throw the spear with some marksmanship into that dome. And he's shown in Godzilla vs. Kong to do it to multiple panels within that dome as well. So it seems to be a regular occurrence.
I think it's fair to say, whilst Godzilla is a more powerful combatant, King Kong is slightly more creative. He'll pick up a dinosaur and throw it into another dinosaur to kill another dinosaur.
Yeah, and that's also why I think we've given Kong an extra story point as well, because for an example from the film, something like Kong stopping Godzilla from using his atomic breath by grabbing his mouth or chucking the end of the axe in his mouth, which is an homage to in 62 King Kong shoving that tree trunk in Godzilla's mouth, you know, that kind of thing feels like a story point expenditure, you know.
He only has 3 traits: berserker, which is a special good. When he goes into a rage, he gets +2 to strength, but he can't distinguish friend from foe, although he doesn't really often have friends in fights, so, you know, only really happens once as far as I can recall. He has fast healing, but critically, he doesn't need to run away like a little cowardly custard.
Yeah, he just has to exhaustedly rest against a building at the end of a fight. He looks great in Godzilla vs. Kong. You're right.
Have you never had to take a breather just for a second, you know?
I've never been a giant monster.
Well, perhaps next time you are in one and you have to do that, you won't judge King Kong quite so harshly.
We should have built a Mechagodzilla anyway.
And critically, I think the most important trait for King Kong is true connection. Now, in King Kong versus Godzilla, Godzilla versus Kong, His true connection is to a little girl called Gia, who is a genius because she teaches a giant ape how to do sign language whilst being watched by CCTV with no one noticing. That is genius. But we leave that to history. King Kong, in every film, every appearance thus far that I recall, he's had a true connection to someone, always a female as well. In the original 1933 version, it was Fay Wray, who you remember from the picture where he climbs up on top of the building and he's holding her in his hand. Also in the remake, Peter Jackson's remake.
Isn't Hamilton is like the 70s one, right?
Yeah.
With Lady Kong.
Yes, and King Kong Lives, he has a true connection to a female of his species and latterly their child. So King Kong likes to bond with the ladies of whatever species. Now, imagine that, what a victory that would have been for the LGBTQ community if Godzilla had turned out to be female. And Kong and Godzilla, instead of fighting, you know, join the dots, people. Anyway, and just quickly, fear factor of 5, plus 10 to inspire fear. We talked about this. There's not a lot in it in terms of which creature is scarier to human beings as far as we could really make out.
Yeah, we made those evenly matched because they're. I think that's sort of a Titan general thing. I wouldn't add. I don't know if I'd increase or decrease that unless you were talking about sort of lower scale or higher scale kaiju. You know, I might lower the fear factor for somebody like Anguirus. I'd like plummet the fear factor for Ultraman, but Ultraman's not a Toho monster, you know. But Jet Jaguar, I would. Jet Jaguar does not have a fear factor. He's deliberately quite lovable. Yeah, so it will fluctuate, but for like a Ghidra, I would honestly consider giving Ghidra is one of those rare cases I would consider maybe a higher fear factor. It is flexible, but for these two, we decided to evenly match it.
I also just to throw in, I found out that obviously Godzilla, Gojira, God Lizard, in the sort of Latin from the Japanese, etc. Kong is Mega Primatus Kong, Mega obviously. Scale and Primatus meaning big primate, so his name in Latin would be big supreme being.
Yeah, I believe Gojira is something like the it combines the kanji for like gorilla and whale, like he's like a
yes, that's correct. Yeah, yeah, and also I want to point this out just because this fascinates me. Confucius, the famous Chinese philosopher, if you literally translate Confucius into English, his name actually becomes King Kong, and that's not a joke. Literally, the root of his name translates into King, and Kong being the sort of family name rather than the honorific. So there you go.
Huh.
Yeah.
Incredible. Well, there's a Doctor Who story pitch right there.
Again, we're through the looking glass on this.
You connect those dots, I don't know.
All of those stats in great detail are on the blog. The trading cards are there as well. And now we're going to talk about how to fit these creatures and kaiju in general into your Doctor Who game. Now, very quickly, just to contextualize, there have been a lot of kaiju in Doctor Who already. For example, we've got a quick list here. The Macra are prime kaiju bait. The Silurians, who are, you know, ruled the earth during dinosaur times, got all kinds of creatures at their disposal, some of which possibly we'd like to forget.
The old Murka, oh yes.
The old Murka. We've had dinosaurs directly in Doctor Who more than once. We've had the K-1 robot from the fourth Doctor, Tom Baker's inaugural episode, which grew...
Sorry to interrupt, but I just realized, going back to a previous reference I made, if you want to build a Jet Jaguar, the K-1 robot is a perfect starting base. The size-changing factor in particular will be very handy.
Exactly, exactly. We've had... monsters on Peladon, who you could easily scale up in size. We've had the Beast, as we mentioned earlier, from the Impossible Planet, and his son, Abaddon, from the season one finale of Torchwood. We haven't met the mother yet, so there's prime kaiju. I mean, the mother must have been a kaiju, I would have imagined. Otherwise, it would have been an awful mess. A fringe one that I just wanted to drop in from the Seventh Doctor, the Candyman, the sweet robot... from Paradise Towers. Come on, just make it bigger. It's perfect kaiju fodder again.
You could have a sugar factory explode. Absolutely.
Radioactive sugar. There you go.
caramel confection of death.
So yeah, so if we're talking Doctor who are the best people to be battling kaiju in the Doctor Who universe, do you think?
Well, obviously it's UNIT, right? I mean, you could set a whole bunch of stuff during this the third Doctor era and have UNIT, you could make UNIT even a part of Monarch or Monarch a part of UNIT. They're interconnected organizations. You could do, you know, like a UNIT-Monarch joint operation on Skull Island or something, and the third Doctor is there as a technical advisor. There's all kinds of great openings, just particularly from that era, and it you know, the 70s are a particularly robust era for kaiju films.
And of course, you've got, if you want to mix and match from the invasion directly involving UNIT again, you've got, is it United Electromatics, who are the Tobias Vaughan's company that were on the cover for the Cybermen?
International Electromatics? It's Electromatics is what I remember, yeah. Yeah, it's international. That's right. Yeah. Yes.
International Electromatics, again, prime fodder for creating any mecha of any stripe. And
yeah, you could replace Apex, or is that the Apex electronics from this movie and their weird Blade Runner pyramid.
And of course, that all connects as well, because you've got the Operation Golden Age from Invasion of the Dinosaurs, again during the third Doctor era. All of that comes in. You can combine it any way you want. Okay, you've got all the material there for kaiju already made from Earth's history, genetic experiments, and making the mecha whatever. I also want to add at this point, because I've literally just thought of it, the Master has the tissue compression eliminator. Well, stick it in reverse, Master, and you've got big things all of a sudden.
The tissue decompression expanderator.
Exactly. So there you go. And because you mentioned Ultraman, who, you know, is part of his remit is to fight creatures like this. The 12th Doctor sourcebook has got the stats for the Ghost, who is basically a superhero in Doctor Who. Tweak those a bit, and you've already got a ready-made defender against these monsters as well. And that's a good template for anything like that at all. So,
and what's handy for Ultraman and later incarnations of Godzilla as well is there are all manner of, you know, monster battling teams like the Science Patrol and things like that you could also have interact with UNIT alternatively.
And this is sort of my favorite train of thought that I had was, right, I don't like the first season of Torchwood, but for fodder for this, I didn't realize how perfect it was until I started thinking about it. So Torchwood, okay, you have got rogue cyberization technology from that episode. You've got Abaddon, a kaiju of ridiculous size and proportion from the season one finale that they kill. So let's say that you've got the cyber technology lying around and a dead Abaddon. You've got Mecha Abaddon. Mecha Abaddon is there, ready to go, bang on. And I just want someone to draw that and send that to us, because I just think I like the idea of Mecha Abaddon. Basically, it's just ready to go for a Doctor Who episode that involves kaiju.
Yeah, it's a perfect story slug. You know, the Mecha Abaddon goes rogue. It's built right in. You know, you play all those classic piloted monster tropes. It's awesome.
Do you want to tackle Hollow Earth or Skull Island first?
Well, they're both connected, which is interesting, because you know, Godzilla vs. Kong notes particularly that Skull Island is a sort of, you know, it's Hollow Earth on Earth is, I think, directly aligned. So they are innately connected. They both, you know, and I've not been quiet about my distaste for the whole Hollow Earth thing in the movie, but you know, the presupposition of like a land with radiation that operates differently, that encourages the growth of, you know, organisms that violate the square cube law, you know, great big giant monsters, that sort of thing. It's so ripe for Doctor Who stuff. You know, UNIT on Skull Island is very exciting. Converting Skull Island, now that Kong is off of it, into sort of a Doctor Who giant monster preserve, or you could do a whole separate story where, like, the Silurians set up camp on Skull Island and all kinds of mayhem breaks loose as a result. It's also unclear, you know, you could even reveal there's some sort of connection between Skull Island directly down to Hollow Earth that they just didn't know about at the time. There's all kinds of possibilities between the two, depending on, you know, your game, your players, what you're interested in exploring. But Godzilla vs. Kong does end with, you know, the establishment of a Hollow Earth station. There's a whole other world inside the world, full of monsters, that is just prime Doctor Who RPG material, really. And even if you want to do a Primeval game, it's like Primeval material too. If you pick up that system and go, oh, I'd really like to try this instead.
Again, it feeds into Doctor Who mythology with almost no effort at all. I mean, we've got a lot of examples of a kind of Hollow Earth paradigm. I mean, the Cybermen, well, Mondas, when it was knocked through the stars and was in its large orbit and became like a vessel, that planet, they basically lived underground. Now, maybe the Cybermen survived because they lived in Mondas's core and their version of Hollow Earth. Maybe there's a huge army of Cybermen, you know, filling out Hollow Earth already, like huge bank armies and armies of them.
Yeah, you could explain the sort of implosion of Mondas at the end of the 10th planet as like the last reserves of Hollow Mondas energy being expended.
Yeah, exactly. There's all kinds of ways to tie in with the Cybermen because we know they lived underground for a long time. Now, and with the Silurians, just as a sort of simple storyline segue, yes, a lot of the Silurians went into suspended animation. Some of them went into space. Maybe some of them somehow tunneled down to Hollow Earth, and the radiation, you know, effectively supercharged them, either made them huge, gave them superpowers, whatever. And, you know, there's an expedition of humans go down there, and suddenly they find a whole Silurian civilization, either asleep or active, that have got superpowers, that literally have superpowers, or you've got gigantic kaiju Silurians. Either of them work.
That could explain the differences between, you know, the new series Silurians and the classic Silurians with the, you know, laser beam third eyes too. There's a lot of room for, you know, headcanoning some stuff too with the variations of Hollow Earth, you know, saturation and Hollow Earth radiation, man.
Yeah, maybe.
I feel like you got to do crazy podcaster voice when you talk about Hollow Earth eventually. It's just mandatory.
Well, there is a crazy podcaster in the...
That's why. I feel so encouraged.
Finally, someone that speaks to us.
I know. I was just going to say, crazy podcaster representation. Hell yeah. So I don't soak myself in bleach, though. It's not really my vibe, but yeah. But maybe I should.
Maybe that's the key. Maybe that gives you the edge in crazy. Who knows? I mean, maybe that's why King Kong got so big between films.
Speaking of the edge in crazy, one of the things we talked about when we were discussing the Hollow Earth 2 is it's a really neat retcon for Dalek Invasion of Earth. You know, they talk about hollowing out the core of the Earth and popping a motor in there and driving the Earth around. Well, what if, you know, the Earth already has this incredible power source they're trying to mine? You could even make that something as crazy as, like, that's your explanation for why the Daleks don't need the transolar disks anymore, is they've harnessed the power of Hollow Earth. They've, you know, much like in Godzilla versus Kong and Apex, they copy the sound wave of Hollow Earth radiation and like upload it to their mainframe or whatever, you know. There's so much potential in, you know, crossing over even just the films of the MonsterVerse with Doctor Who, much less the wider, broader web of all kinds of, you know, Godzilla or King Kong stuff you could dig into.
Exactly. I mean, and, you know, they said they were going to hollow out the core and fly the Earth around the universe. Well, maybe they weren't really going to put an engine in there. Maybe they were just going to like put an exhaust port and channel the Hollow Earth energy, and that's why they went to Earth, because it's already a ready-made spaceship.
Yeah.
To say nothing of the fact that, critically, the Daleks themselves are a product of radiation. So maybe they detected this amazing radiation on Earth and thought, we can create supercharged, super-powerful Daleks. We just need to get to the core of this Earth.
Ooh, a Khaled mutant kaiju. That's exciting.
A Khaled Jew. No, wait, that sounds like a... Khaled
that you gotta cut that.
Yeah, that sounds like a Khaled that goes to a synagogue. Okay, a Khaled.
Although a Khaled with a yarmulke is an incredible image.
I don't want to speak ill of our Hebrew friends and relatives out there, but what is a Dalek?
Oh, no.
What is a Dalek shell if not a very hard wearing yarmulke?
All right, you gotta cut all this.
I need to cut that. I don't know. I desperately want to leave it in, but I'm just not sure. Genuinely, no disrespect meant to anyone out there who, you know, is of the Hebrew persuasion. And I'm not comparing you to Daleks at all.
Never.
Good. I think I can leave that in now. And now this is a very wacky theory, but you know, I actually had this theory at 4 o'clock in the morning when I couldn't sleep. Is the Hollow Earth a TARDIS that got stuck inside the Earth that was put there to battle the Rachnos if it woke up and it got stuck? Because that means that the Earth is bigger on the inside, like a TARDIS. And maybe that TARDIS has been there so long, it's had a size leak and it's broken and it's leaking that radiation. And that's the source of the radiation that breeds these bigger creatures.
Checks out.
The science checks out. That could be it.
Does this mean that River Song is a kaiju?
Yes.
I guess she'd be a kaijin, because kaijin is like human scale monster. But anyway, whatever.
I don't know. She's got maybe that river. Maybe she literally, you know, can... Yeah, a river is bigger
than... River Song a Kamen Rider? Ooh. Does she? No, she never rides a motorcycle. Damn it. Okay,
yeah, she
maybe
does.
She's just
yeah,
an
she
ultra
does.
Woman.
She literally rides a motorcycle in her first...
That's right, let's kill Hitler. Oh, yes.
That sounded, take it all back. That sounded much more like a let's go and kill Hitler. Like, let's kill Hitler, rather than you remembering the title there.
In my defense, who doesn't want to go kill Hitler? I mean, come on.
You raise a fair point.
If you had the option on the table, you'd be like, yo, let's rock, baby. I'm in. Give me a spear.
Exactly. Now, obviously, if we have any Nazi listeners, I'll have to cut that out. So there's not going to be a lot of content left in this episode.
I'm not so worried about them, strangely enough.
In fact, I'm going to go on the record and say, screw you, Nazis. There you go. I know I'm British and you're not used to hearing me say blue words like that. Skull Island, you can use it as is. It's a monster island for Doctor Who. You can dump any creatures from Doctor Who lore on there. I did have the idea that what if someone goes to Skull Island to get, you know, you've got all these kaiju on there killing each other, body parts lying around. What if someone builds Super Morbius?
Nice.
A kaiju body for Morbius's brain. And of course, Mecha Morbius is only a hop, skip and a jump away from there.
Yeah, there's all kinds of interesting beasts on Skull Island too. And Godzilla vs. Kong has those wild bats. Like, there's all kinds of like neat bits you could take parts off of. Like the skull crawler guys. They're neat.
Exactly.
You could really get a cool Morbius vibe going.
And you've got so many evil organisations in Doctor Who that would, you know, go around hoovering these parts up, just saying, I'll have a bit of that, I'll have a bit of that, let's stitch this to this, and Bob's your uncle. Mm-hmm. And, of course, and again, slightly way out, but no reason why you can't use this, taking a leaf from the Five Doctors, let's say Skull Island is, you know, dimensionally or temporally transcendental, or your Skull Island isn't on Earth at all. What if the Time Lords use their time scoop to dump a bunch of creatures that are too dangerous to be allowed out in the universe on their version of Skull Island and let them fight each other to extinction?
Yeah, you know? Gallifrey's Skull Island. I like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And Gallifrey's Monster Island.
Exactly. And of course, it's going to go wrong because it will end up creating a super mega creature that even the Time Lords can't stop. And there's your adversary for your episode. Simple as that.
Yeah, alternatively, it could just be a land, you know, they set up back in the Rassilon times that you could explore. There's a lot of... latitude there too.
Let's not forget that the Time Lords have never ever had a plan that went right, ever in their history, I don't think.
It just does. Yeah, they don't. They're not very good at plans. But yeah, another Skull Island thing, we sort of previously mentioned it, but I think it'd be a perfect starting location for setting up like a Silurian embassy on Earth, you know, and then it turns out that there are other beasts on the island that are not as okay with that. Or even, you know, alternatively, you could make Skull Island a new sort of, you know, home base landing location for Zygon's garrison and turn it into like, again, paralleling something out of a Marvel comic, but you could make Skull Island into like Zygon Krakoa if you wanted to, from the more modern X-Men comics, like a sort of safe land for Zygons to be Zygons if they wanted to. There's so much latitude in merging these worlds, I think, that it's exciting. It's very energizing, I think.
We literally have, from that two-parter in the 11th Doctor's first season, you have a whole bunch of Silurians frozen underground waiting to wake up in 1,000 years time. Well, there you go. They're in Hollow Earth there, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, there's, you know, already precedent. And just to sort of finish off this sort of tranche of speculation, we talked about the beast earlier on, which is from the Impossible Planet, some kind of demonic kaiju, more intelligent than most kaiju. It speaks and reasons and everything. Maybe the Lords of Light, who imprisoned the beast, realized his prison wasn't going to last forever. And so they created Skull Island and the Hollow Earth and what have you, because they were deliberately, they're like hands off. They just like, they don't like to interfere too much. So they're trying to breed a creature that can kill the beast in a one-on-one. And of course, that leads to huge fights and what have you. So, you know, the godlike aliens creating a big lab petri dish means you can go hog wild with any kind of kaiju kind of creation that you want. Fits in fairly seamlessly. And you've, as we mentioned earlier, you've got the Cyber King. So the Cybermen are ready to go to create anything, because the Cybermen have shown they'll cyberize anything, basically. You know, when it comes to making something bionic or cyborg, they're dirty sluts. They will change, they'll do it for anything. Doctor Who lore fits in well. Just two things that I just want to mention quickly to sort of round off my ideas anyway. The Time War excuse. Anything can be a weapon in the Time War. That includes kaiju. So the Time Lords and the Daleks grabbing creatures from the dark times, maybe from the far future, mutating things, whatever, dumping kaiju. Some things escape the Time War. Some, if you set your campaign in the Time War, you've got an excuse for anything like this at all. The Time War is a great excuse for stuff like this. Anything can be a forbidden experiment. And of course, my favorite idea is that everything that happens with kaiju is all the Seventh Doctor's plan to deal with a problem. Whatever the problem is you want it to be, the Seventh Doctor set all this up. He usually did. So, oh, and of course, Michael, at this point, do you want to say Faction Paradox did it, or shall I say it? I don't
mind. It's generally you, so please.
I like to think we've shared the Faction Paradox solution, but yeah, it was Faction Paradox.
Yes, they did do it.
Apex, Monarch, Godzilla, you know, King Kong. King Kong was just a duke until Faction Paradox came along and messed with his timeline, so.
It's true. I have one last pitch inspired by a challenge you issued to me, which is that I think a terrific thing you could do for your game.
Wait, stop.
No.
Michael, before you say this,
no.
Can I just give me 1 second to gird my loins, because I know what you're going to say and it's going to hurt me deeply. So.
No. You have so much time. I'm going to lead up to this. It's a Rachel Maddow bit. I do this to you every time. Get ready. You've got 20 minutes and then I'm going to just plant the knife. All right. So here we go. So we talked about it earlier. The film King Kong Escapes. There is so many elements within the film King Kong Escapes. I think would be really exciting to adapt, even potentially as a sequel within your game within the Doctor Who RPG to Godzilla versus Kong. One of the most exciting elements is, of course, Mechana Kong, which is a cyberized version of King Kong. You could make this like a previous corpse of a Kong that has been cyberized into a Mechanikong. Anyway, the most exciting part of it is that Mechanikong is developed by a group of alien scientists who are running a dangerous criminal enterprise headed by a nefarious, dangerous man in black, a very familiar outfit, who is motivated by one thing. He is hunting down King Kong's love interest in that film, a young woman named Susan. Now, why is this lead so interested in Susan, you might ask? Well, I propose to you that this mad scientist, the lead of the criminal organization, a character named in the film Doctor Who, is a pre-Hartnell doctor. In fact, a doctor just before the events of An Unearthly Child. Challenge met, and I do believe I delivered quite well. Did I not? Now, I want you to remember, Ryan, and I want the listeners out there to know that Ryan distinctly and deliberately challenged me to find a potential link with a timeless child. And would you believe it? I did it. I did it in one.
You, sir, are a Korean toilet ghost of a human being. That's all I've got to say about that.
7 days.
Oh, my God.
You asked me. No. I'm sorry. I said that wrong. You challenged me. How'd I do?
Oh, my God. Yes. No. You know what? You got that knife squarely in between my shoulder blades.
It's a special Faction Paradox knife. It has two blades, so it goes in both the hearts.
Oh, dear. Depending on when this episode comes out, you won't...
It's made out of like a space bat, because everything involving Faction Paradox is like a space bat.
A space bat made of shadows.
Yeah.
Depending on when this episode comes
out. An nth dimensional shadow bat.
Listeners will...
Wow, that was... God, I was... That went so well.
Was that satisfying for you?
Yeah, I'm going to go have a cigarette when we're done.
Just. I think listeners should know. I have a.
I swear. By the way, I discovered that Susan thing like 11th hour, and I was like, oh yeah, it's beautiful. It's a terrific film, and even better, Ryan, you're going to love this. Doctor Who was already integrated into the Doctor Who, the King Kong Escapes character, Doctor Who, was already integrated into the British television series Doctor Who canon by the creator of Faction Paradox, Lawrence Miles, in his novel The Adventuress and Henrietta Street.
Oh, God, yes, I know.
So it really is two knives.
Wow.
In fact, I think the gag Lawrence Miles is setting up is that the Doctor Who in King Kong Escapes is like the Peter Cushing version of a real Doctor Who in like Victorian times, which is an incredible transcendental gag. But you just, it's really good. It's really, really good.
so just for context, depending on when this episode comes out in relation to another episode we've recorded, Michael is aware that I have a special distaste for the current reign of Doctor Who. That's not surprising, but I have a particular dislike for the TC theme.
The Timeless Child. You're talking about the Timeless Child?
Thank you, Nixon.
I find it... I didn't like it initially, but I find it very exciting. I have a wild theory about the Doctor now that they're actually in a sort of endless loop. Like the Doctor never ends. Like that's what the sort of nature of the child. Anyway, please go on. Please go on.
Yeah, it never ends, much like you're tormenting with me. Anyway, in a previous episode we recorded, I made a creative slip up which allowed for the TC element to be injected into one of my favourite other franchises, Highlander.
The Highlanders?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
So it's quite possible that
was the most incredible... I watched Ryan build a gallows, get up on the gallows, put the rope on his own neck, and be like, "You wanna waggle this lever a little?" It was incredible work, man.
Yeah, and depending on when this episode comes out in relation to that, you may have seen the effect after the effect preceding the cause.
I wish I wasn't this evil.
Because
I really don't.
Michael effectively has. I don't lightly use the word betrayal, but he has effectively killed my soul twice now. I think he gets to keep it if he does it a third time. I'm not sure what the rules are on this.
I got a little jar. It's going to be very nice.
Yes. So, yeah. Wow.
I'm going to keep it in a toy hypercube from the Doctor Who character options.
That actually fits because I am sending out a psychic distress signal to anyone who will listen. But yes.
Oh, man.
So
that's good.
So yes. So good.
I wouldn't have, but you challenged me.
The Shakespeare once said the quality of mercy is not strained, but remember he lived 400 and something years before Michael Nixon was born, so he was wrong.
And he could never spell his name the same way twice. So what does that guy know? Come on.
I think that my brain is all a fuzz now, so you may have made a fair point there. I don't know. I only know that my heart is now dead. So if anyone knows how to resuscitate a broken soul, please email us or tweet us at WWDWRPG urgently.
Yes, I'm going to scale down, climb into a tiny toy heave from the film Godzilla vs. Kong, fly it onto Ryan's chest and exit. It will detonate, and then hopefully Ryan will awaken. Or it might explode. The physics on that's a little questionable, but it's a movie about giant monsters. Who cares? Who cares?
Yeah, it's great. Not the only questionable thing you've done today.
We did talk about Hollow Earth a lot. I don't feel great about it.
I think that covers Godzilla versus King Kong in quite a varied and useful amount of detail. There's certainly a lot there for any Doctor Who role-playing game you might want to run. Michael, do you want to plug anything before I get into the bath and, you know, try and make toast while I'm in there?
Before you pass out from exhaustion. I understand. I'm at Michael Nixon on the various socials media, Twitter, Instagram, those things. And please, please, please check out the Game of Rassilon podcast. We are at Rassilon Pod on most socials media and on Patreon. Depending on when this comes out, we may have announced it or not, but this weekend I am GMing for the first time a Patreon exclusive adventure, our adaptation of Human Nature by Paul Cornell, which should be very, very cool. I'm really excited. I've done a lot of crazy stuff to this story, and I think the team they're going to rise to the occasion in very cool ways. I'm very, very excited to do it. And I hope it might open the door to us doing additional adaptations of novel stuff in the future, but we will see. So yeah, please check us out on the various things. We also obviously have a free show. We would never, infringe on the accessibility of the free show. The main feed is still available with brand new adventures featuring Riley Silverman's incredible doctor, Travis, played by Dan Peck, and the ever surprising, ever imaginative Carrie, played by Kate Lay, who's just, I say it every time, but she's been a wonderful breath of fresh air to the show, with stories developed by myself and the exquisite game master Ben Padden. So yeah, please check us out on wherever you get your pods. Cool new Doctor Who adventures. Don't worry, I don't bring up the Timeless Child as much as I do on here. I just save that for Ryan.
I remember looking forward to things at one point, and excitement and friends and joy, and I think I maybe even smiled once upon a time.
Well, you're being kind of morbid. Wait, morbid? Like the Morbius boys? Timeless children. I gotta go. I'm sorry. I'm gonna leave now.
Yes, we will be back once I pick my soul out of the bin.
Ryan has to go down to the Hollow Earth to regenerate.
The Hollow Earth, or as I like to call it, my life.
Oh, no!
In future episodes, which may have come out in the past, we're going to be covering The Prisoner from The Prisoner, as in The Village, as in number 6. And I may have promised someone that we would be converting Loki once we've watched the Loki TV series. So the least Michael can do is help me with that.
Oh, if it lets me go on a whole ramble about Professor Gamble, one of my favorite ersatz Marvel characters. It's Marvel's Doctor Who. Once they lost Doctor Who, they had this whole character, Professor Gamble. You know, I'll save it for then. We'll do it then. Yeah, yeah.
And before, you know what? This is what you have done to me. I've just realized that Loki in Avengers Endgame steals the Tesseract and jumps out of his timeline and comes to the Prime timeline. So, of course, Loki is a timeless child.
Yes, he has, in fact, escaped a previous universe. And
but at least this was me killing my own soul, and I stopped you doing it in advance.
See, I wouldn't have even gone that far. Yeah, the timeless child, I think, is a unique, uniquely the Doctor. All right, we just couldn't keep doing this. It's just going to... Now everybody doesn't like anybody.
Well, I think it's time for us to say goodbye. I'm having a long, dark night of the soul. And I hope to see you all again. What's left of me for the next episode?
I'm excited for you to invite me back for whatever reason you keep doing it.
Yeah. I'm not sure I have any free will in the matter now. I just feel like when we do the last episode of this show, we reveal that it was all a setup by Faction Paradox, and that Michael is actually...
I am the Timeless Child.
Oh, my God.
I just pull off my mask, and it's exactly the same face. Oh God! The ultimate twist. It was me all along.
This episode is going to end with a single shotgun shell.
I'm the pre-timeless child, timeless child. I'm a pre-Hartnell timeless child. Oh God, it's too... I gotta go. I'm gonna leave now. I can't inflict this much damage in one day. You're going to have to cut this into segments.
I'm not going to speak ill of your family, but your surname is awfully well chosen.
My family is lovely. How dare you? I am a horrifying exception to those wonderful people.
There's no other way to end the show just by saying goodbye. And I hope you're having a better time than I am right now. So goodbye, everybody, whenever and wherever you are.
I'm having a great time. Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Wibbly Wobbly Dicey Wicey. Please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. Feel free to get in touch with any questions or suggestions for future episodes, either on Facebook, by email www.rpg@gmail.com, or by Twitter @wwdwrpg.